Our luncheon speaker, our keynote speaker, is Tom Stevens, who is the GM's Vice Chairman in Global Product Operations. Tom has addressed our group before, several years ago. I'm pleased to have him back again. You know, as you might recall, he had joined General Motors as a young man in 1969. So he's been there a while. He's served in a number of different positions throughout the company. He's an engineer by training and had been in a number of engineering supervisory positions in the company. In February 2007, Tom Stevens was elected as a new member of the National Academy of Engineering for his leadership role in the development of automated powertrains with improved performance, fuel efficiency, and lower emissions. I can tell you that General Motors is a company on the way back. Just a few weeks ago, I had the privilege of driving a car of the future. It was the Volt, the ethanol-powered, soon-to-be ethanol-powered, plug-in electric vehicle. And I tell you, it's got some serious pep. I'm a guy from Boston that drives like one with a heavy foot, and this thing was really a performance vehicle. And as I'm already amazed by the vehicle, and the gentleman from General Motors that was with me said, well, wait till you try this mode. And he puts it on the sport mode. And then it was like a little jackrabbit. This is a car that, when driving on ethanol or electricity, is going to be a heck of a lot of fun. I look forward to seeing General Motors return to the prestige position of American Industries, as I know that it will. And I sure look forward to hearing from Tom Stevens today. Please join me in welcoming the Vice Chairman, Global Product Operations, Tom Stevens.
Thanks, Bob. You know, I'm really delighted to be here today to share GM's perspective on renewable fuels. And this is also really a great opportunity to learn what others have to say on this important subject. Plus, it's always nice to visit Orlando in February, especially if you live in Michigan. The last time I addressed this conference was in 2005. I announced a program to provide GM flex fuel vehicles to the Governor's Biofuels Coalition. A lot's changed since then, especially at General Motors. After surviving bankruptcy last year, GM today is a new company. We have a new leadership team in place, and we're once again able to focus on what's really important, realizing our vision to design, build, and sell the world's best vehicles. But one thing really hasn't changed, and that's GM's strong commitment to biofuels. We continue to believe they are the best near-term solution to reduce our dependence on petroleum, to expand our nation's energy portfolio, and to reduce the carbon footprint of driving. So today I want to begin by applauding the outstanding accomplishments of the people in this room. You've made ethanol a mainstream American fuel. It's a fuel that's been met with enthusiasm by consumers who seek more choice in the fuels they purchase and the vehicles they drive. Unfortunately, not everyone shares the enthusiasm. So we must look for ways to educate others on why biofuels are a great choice for consumers and for our country. And speaking of working together to educate and inform, we applaud RFA's 13-year support of the U.S. Department of Energy's Advanced Vehicle Technology Competition. Since these competitions started over 20 years ago, RFA, along with other sponsors like GM, has helped to educate more than 10,000 college students. They've learned about total life cycle analysis, vehicle-fuel interactions, and the critical role that biofuels can play in reducing the CO2 footprint. These students are now assuming leadership positions in government, industry, and academia. They are positioned to impact products and policy based on facts. You know, when I work with the team at GM, I keep emphasizing the need to develop the right product at the right price at the right time. Each of these elements must come together to make an individual product successful. So when I think of biofuels, I think the same way. Here, right products mean quality fuels made to defined specifications and are compatible with the vehicles that use them. Right price means vehicles and fuels that consumers will select based on simple economics. And the right time means that compatible vehicles and fuels are both readily available in the marketplace. This will allow both vehicles and fuels to mature and successfully meet the needs of our consumers. Now let's take a look at where we are today. Although petroleum has been the primary fuel for over 100 years, there are some big challenges to its continued predominance. Globally, over 35% of today's energy needs are met with petroleum. Meanwhile, overall energy demand is steadily increasing by about 2% per year. As a result, oil consumption is rapidly outstripping supply, largely because 96% of today's vehicles are dependent on petroleum. For the auto industry, this means we don't have a sustainable energy model. And we also need a solution to reduce greenhouse gases as well as our dependency on oil. Just to satisfy growth and replace reserves, we'll need to find the equivalent of six Saudi Arabias by 2030. At GM, we think some of those Saudi Arabias might be sitting right here in this room. For those who are skeptical, the amount of ethanol being produced in the U.S. today is already equal to about 40% of the oil being supplied by the Saudis. And if we follow the U.S. renewable fuel standard curve, by 2019, the U.S. will use as much ethanol for energy as it does oil for energy from the Saudi Arabians. To support our focus on the right products, GM has an advanced propulsion technology strategy that attacks both energy efficiency and energy diversity. We are working to dramatically improve the efficiency of our conventional engines and transmissions and ultimately reduce tailpipe emissions to zero. But that's not enough. We also need to displace petroleum by diversifying the energy sources used to fuel our vehicles. The U.S. must develop all of its energy assets, including conventional and unconventional sources of petroleum. And we also must develop a range of alternative fuels, ethanol and biodiesel, and compressed natural gas, and LPG, and electricity from the grid, and ultimately hydrogen. Our strategy supports the coexistence of a number of liquid fuels, from gasoline and diesel fuels to synthetics and biofuels. But as we move to the future, electricity and hydrogen also have the potential to be an important transportation fuel. Their use will grow as advanced lithium-ion battery and fuel cell technology become more capable and affordable than they are today. However, for the foreseeable future, we see liquid fuel as the primary vehicle energy carrier for automobiles. This chart shows why. The energy storage density of liquid fuels far exceeds that of batteries and hydrogen. So today, liquid fuels are where consumers currently get the most bang for their buck. A deep understanding of customer needs is the first step in having the right products at the right price at the right time. So we must understand both customer pocketbooks and driving requirements. Today, that can mean a short commute to work, long distance travel, carrying more passengers, or hauling cargo, or quite frankly, all of the above. To meet these needs, GM will continue to work on a range of advanced propulsion technologies. Right now, there is no silver bullet technology. There's no one technology that provides a single solution as we work to reduce our dependence on oil and curb CO2. Flex fuel capability is one technology where our advanced propulsion strategy meets the road. GM has built and sold millions of flex fuel vehicles around the world. We've produced more than 5.5 million vehicles globally. And of the 7.5 million on U.S. roads, more than 4 million are GM cars and trucks. This year, we offer 17 flex fuel models in the U.S., representing all four of our core brands. And we've also committed to making more than half of our vehicle production flex fuel capable by 2012. At GM, we're on track to exceed our 50% commitment, providing that there is steady growth in the fueling station infrastructure. Initially, our flex fuel rollout focused on more traditional port fuel injected engines. Soon we'll begin debuting E85 capable direct injected powertrains. So you'll see some of our newest, hottest, highest technology and highest volume models able to run E85. That includes our Chevy Equinox and GMC Terrain crossovers, which are equipped with direct injected engines and will be flex fuel capable next year. And shortly after they hit the market, our new Buick Regal will offer both naturally aspirated and turbocharged direct injected flex fuel engines. And the Chevrolet Cruze will offer a downsized turbocharged flex fuel engine. While you're here at the conference, I'd like to invite you to visit GM's flex fuel vehicle display to see some of our current offerings. And these are just the beginning. We also plan to make our Chevrolet Volt, which is an extended range electric vehicle, flex fuel capable about a year or so after it's introduced. Just think about that. The Volt will deliver 40 miles of all electric driving and then could switch to ethanol blends all the way up to E85. Now, we're really excited about the complementary nature of biofuels and electric propulsion. By combining these two promising energy sources, we can practically eliminate petroleum from the Volt and dramatically cut its CO2 impact. Okay, enough about our products. Let's talk about yours. General Motors sees ethanol and other fuels made from biomass as an important way to expand our energy portfolio. A couple years ago, a study we did with the University of Toronto concluded that ethanol could replace a third of the U.S. liquid fuel supply by 2030. That represents 90 billion gallons of ethanol. We also collaborated with Sandia National Labs on a study to determine how to produce the biomass needed to reach this level. A key assumption going in was that we would not sacrifice any cropland that's currently used to grow food. Corn ethanol acreage was therefore held to the 2006 level, which is equal to about 15 billion gallons. Of course, corn yields double every 25 to 30 years, thanks to breeding, hybrid genetics, and biotechnology improvements. So we know U.S. corn growers will continue to achieve record yields, and corn ethanol production will increase. Our study with Sandia also looked at investment costs to develop biomass sources. This analysis concluded that the capital needed is close to the expenditure required to punch new holes in the ground to find oil. Building on the study, biotechnology industry groups estimate that more than 800,000 new jobs will be added. That's if advanced biofuels grow to the levels established in the renewable fuel standard. These new jobs will be in sectors that have experienced high rates of job loss, such as agriculture and construction. To help accelerate the technology and move more rapidly up the learning curve, GM is investing in biofuel science. We're directly funding biofuels research and development at leading universities to help advance ethanol production technologies. And we're participating on the industrial advisory boards of leading biomass consortia. Over the past year, for instance, we've provided input to Iowa State University's indirect land use modeling efforts. As you know, this is a key area of research that needs to mature before it drives policy. We've also invested in Cascada and Muskoma to speed up the early commercialization of second-generation biofuels. These two leading startup companies are working on breakthrough biomass conversion processes. GM made these investments not to become a fuel company, but to learn about and better understand biofuel evolution. Cascada has successfully scaled its cellulosic ethanol technology and is opening a semi-commercial facility outside Pittsburgh. As we speak today, the facility is converting southern pine into ethanol. Cascada has already delivered two batches of its cellulosic ethanol to our scientists at the Milford Proving Grounds in Michigan for testing. And I can tell you, it's going to be a great high-octane fuel for GM's flex fuel vehicles. You know, you'll be able to learn more about the company's progress when Wes Bolson speaks at the conference tomorrow. Muskoma is also making great strides with its one-step biochemical process that takes wood and plant waste to ethanol. Muskoma has successfully demonstrated consolidated bioprocessing at its pilot plant in Rome, New York, and it's now moving forward with plans for a commercial plant in northern Michigan. It's raised about $49 million from the state and the U.S. Department of Energy to build the plant. These are very encouraging developments, and Cascada and Muskoma are just two among dozens of companies doing important work on second-generation biofuels. Looking to the future, GM's goal is to be ready for all the fuels that flow through tomorrow's pipeline. That's why we also support the development of renewable gasoline and diesel fuels. Several companies are working on processes to produce these fuels, which avoid the infrastructure and compatibility issues associated with non-fungible fuels. We recognize that these fuels are only at the laboratory stage and are several years away from commercial markets. So we believe efforts to develop drop-in fuels should be supported in parallel with other biofuels development. In particular, it's critical to implement the infrastructure and technology needed to expand first and second generation biofuels like corn and cellulosic ethanol. Okay, thus far, I've touched on vehicles and I've touched on fuels. Now I'd like to discuss the area where our products come together, and that's at the pump. As you would expect, GM believes initiatives to expand the infrastructure for flex fuel vehicles are extremely important. We've been working with the National Governors Association, ethanol producers, and retailers to expand the number of ethanol dispensers around the country. I'm pleased to say that through these efforts, we've been able to add more than 350 additional pumps to locations around the U.S. And your industry has made progress on pump installations as well. Efforts by RFA, ACE, Growth Energy have led to hundreds of new pump installations. But a lot more pumps are needed. and we need to put them where the vehicles are located. Today, the largest concentrations of flex fuel vehicles are found in the highest population areas, shown in green on this map. Meanwhile, two-thirds of the E85 stations are in the 10 states shaded in yellow. In fact, 90% of the registered flex fuel vehicles don't have an E85 station in their zip code, and nearly 50% don't have E85 in their county. This is an area where we need producers, retailers, and government to take action. GM is spending about $100 million a year adding flex fuel capability to our vehicles. We can't afford to leave this capital stranded. At GM, we've found that working with others is a great way to move the needle on infrastructure. For example, we partnered with the states of Indiana, Alabama, Tennessee, and Kentucky, the DOE, Clean Cities, and others to help create America's first biofuels corridor. The corridor runs 886 miles along Interstate 65 from Lake Michigan to the Gulf of Mexico. Since it was completed in 2008, motorists traveling along this route are never more than a quarter of a tank away from an E85 pump. Another way to extend the flex fuel infrastructure is to introduce blender pumps. GM strongly supports their deployment. Blender pumps will allow retailers to put both mid and high-level ethanol blends into pumps that can be used for flex fuel vehicles. We believe these pumps will be a critical element in enabling consumers to choose the right fuel for their vehicles and other motorized equipment. We also believe it's critical to complete the planned testing of mid-level blends. Manufacturers and the public need to understand the impact of these blends on our current light-duty fleet, as well as off-road vehicles, boats, and other equipment. However, I'd add a note of caution. Until the results of these comprehensive durability tests are fully understood, we remain concerned about customers using fuels containing more than 10% ethanol. We have a real concern that if ethanol gets a bad name, it'll be bad for everyone. It'll be bad for you, it'll be bad for us, and it'll be bad for the country. And this is just too important to get it wrong. We need the decisions on mid-level blends to be based on sound science. And if the science supports them, so will we. It's as simple as that. And talking about consumer reactions, we must also step up efforts to educate consumers on the benefits of biofuels. GM, RFA, and others in your industry have worked to drive the facts on biofuels, but we need everyone to pick up the pace. We still have a long way to go to change attitudes and capture hearts and minds. Government needs to play its role too. Federal, state, and local governments need to enable the introduction of fuels from a variety of energy sources. We need national goals for renewable and low carbon fuels, and we need excise tax credits and loan guarantees. They are important to mitigate early commercialization risks. Governments around the world have played a key role in enabling new markets through tax policy. In most developed countries, this comes in the form of heavy taxation on both gas and diesel fuel. In other cases, alternative fuels, such as E85, have been enabled through tax relaxation. In the U.S., VTEC has been a critical enabler to the development of ethanol blend fuels. We need to see some form of VTEC that will continue to support the development of biofuels in the U.S. In the end, our fuel and vehicle choices will be driven by many things: the right product, at the right price, at the right time. The promise of biofuels is real, and it's our job, our collective job, to get this done. But we do need to avoid the potholes in the road, such as immature models of indirect land use, infrastructure that does not support various ethanol blends, fuel use waivers issued without regard to sound science or test data completeness, the price of gasoline that does not support consumer decisions to buy either advanced propulsion vehicles or alternative fuels, using drop-in fuels as an excuse for avoiding biofuel infrastructure growth, and the lack of policy to drive flex fuel vehicle availability. The next 2 to 3 years is a critical time for biofuels. We must see second generation fuels commercialized through appropriate government and commercial support. Partnerships involving industry, government, and academia need to flourish. We must all work together, and we need to get it right. We need to do this for consumers, for the environment, for our country, for your industry and mine. For our part, GM intends to continue to be the automotive leader in biofuels, and we will further this effort with both enthusiasm and sound science. We stand ready to work with the government, the Renewable Fuels Association, and other interested parties to get our customers the right vehicles and fuels, the right price, and do all of this at the right time. Now, I want to thank each and every one of you for your outstanding efforts in making ethanol a real choice for U.S. consumers. Thank you.